Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with General Michael Hayden, Director of the National Security Agency. And joining me in our conversation is another PwC partner, Bonnie Brown. Well, General, can you tell us about the organizations that provide oversight of NSA and your interaction with them?
Sure, Paul. That's really very important. From time to time, we get criticism that, what's the right phrase, we're off the leash or fox guarding the hen house or other descriptions that somehow imply that what we're doing is somehow unlawful or beyond the view of those who should be looking at our work. That's really not true. Occasionally, someone who's trying to be friendly to the agency in their commentary in the public domain will say, no, we think the agency does obey the law, but in essence, they're saying we're the government, trust us, which is not very comforting to a free people. And you have to keep in mind that the thousands of agency employees out there are also citizens of the United States and are sensitive to civil liberties as any citizen in the nation. What I've taken to saying to groups is that you can trust us. I know the people in the National Security Agency. I know how committed they are to protecting American privacy. I know how knowledgeable they are about the Fourth Amendment and the other regulations that control their activities. So they deserve your trust. But you don't have to trust them. And that's the punchline. There is a body of oversight in the executive and legislative branch that looks into our business constantly and routinely. And there's no way we could sustain any kind of violation of American privacy without these oversight bodies being aware of it. There's an oversight office within the Secretary of Defense's office. There's an oversight subcommittee of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. Both the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence have a powerful oversight role over the National Security Agency. They have staffers that have badges to enter the agency just like mine. They are very aggressive in looking at what the agency does. And so if we're violating the law and covering it up, everyone I've just described has to be in on it. And it's just simply not true.
General, we hear the term Project Groundbreaker. Can you describe that project for us and talk to us about what prompted this new project?
Bonnie, this is a pretty dramatic change of course for us. We made a strategic decision that as we're trying to cope with that technological revolution I described a few minutes ago taking place on the outside, that we needed allies in order to be able to do that. That's almost countercultural for NSA. And keep in mind, we were America's information age enterprise during America's industrial age. And during that industrial age, we built up habits of turning inward, doing things for ourselves rather than looking externally beyond the confines of Fort Meade to the broader American society because, by and large, the things we needed didn't exist in the broader American society. If we didn't do it, it wasn't going to get done. So we've built up that habit. That's no longer true. America's gone through a great technological revolution in both telecommunications and computer science. And so some things that we need are now readily available on the outside. And so, again, we made the strategic decision that a significant portion of our information technology, about 40%, was going to be outsourced to a private firm. That effort goes by the name of Groundbreaker. We put out our RFPs, our requests for proposal. Bids have come back in, and we're going to let a contract before the end of this month, before the month of July. And we expect a giant of American industry to come in and cover a significant portion of our IT needs, our telephones, our workstations, our network management. These are classified networks, but not narrowly, tightly defined mission networks. It allows us to narrow our front. It allows us to concentrate then on those parts of our information technology that only we can do because they're so mission essential, because the activities are so inherently governmental.
How long did it take Groundbreaker to come to be? This month it will be awarded. How long did the thinking you describe have to? How long ago did it start?
It started before I became director, so that's over 27, 28 months ago. Last June, so now we're talking 13 months back. I got senior leadership received a briefing on the investigation that had taken place, seeing if this would be a viable idea. And in June of last year, I made the decision that we would move forward on that. And what we have been doing since then is putting the request for proposal together, writing down detailed service level agreements, putting the RFP out, dialoguing with three industry teams that are competing for the contract, and as I said, we're about ready to award it. This takes effect this fall. So once the contract is awarded, well before the Christmas holidays, as I said, a significant portion of information technology will be under the control being run by a private firm.
How long did it take for people at NSA to realize what you described, that we had once been the only people doing this and now others were and often even doing it better? How long did that take?
Well, I would suspect intellectually, not a long time. Emotionally, quite different. It's one thing to intellectually say, yes, I understand we need allies in industry to do some things. Yes, I understand that narrows our front and allows us to focus on things only we can do. It's quite another thing to take that leap and say, and so I quite understand why you're outsourcing my job. And the Groundbreaker contract is going to impact a significant portion of the agency workforce, now, measured in hundreds. We hope will be hired. In fact, the contract calls for them to be hired by the winning contractor. And the hope part is that our employees would willingly do this and go with that contractor because we think this is would be a very good deal for them, for the contractor, and for the National Security Agency.
Let me shift gears and ask about another subject which has to do with the declassification and often the release of information. What are the management challenges involved with doing that?
The management challenges come back to just volume. I mean, there's just masses of information that we've compiled over the years. At last count, I think we've actually reviewed about 50 million pages of classified documents and have moved about 35 million of them on to the National Archives. What I've just given you could be read as pretty sterile compliance with the law, which I guess it is. But there's something more here, too, that's really important for us. I've been mentioning this need for us to have greater contact with the outside world, that we need allies in private industry and so on. For that to happen, the larger American society needs a better understanding of what the National Security Agency does. I mean, we can't be viewed as malevolent or incompetent, which was making the rounds in some press articles about 2 years ago. But we also can't afford to tell people what it is we're doing today. For reasons of operational security. SIGINT is a very fragile discipline, and an adversary's knowledge that you might be detecting him is in itself sufficient to destroy that source for us. And so one has to be very careful with this kind of information. So how do you explain to the American people, how do you explain to the public at large what it is you're doing without compromising what it is you're doing? And the answer is history. And this declassification project has allowed us to tell some stories. We've told the story of Venona, which is our breaking of Soviet diplomatic codes and our backstopping to the communist spy scandals in the early 1950s. And we've been able to lay that out in some great detail. We've also been able to tell the part of the National Security Agency in the Cuban Missile Crisis, what we saw, what we learned, hearing Spanish-speaking pilots, for example, at airfields in Czechoslovakia. That kind of information that allows us to show what we actually contribute to the American people and to American safety and security. And right now, because it's the 50th anniversary of the war, we're rolling out a whole tranche of documents on what it is we did during the Korean War.
Your organization obviously has very specialized skill sets. Talk to us a little bit about the recruiting process that candidates go through prior to joining the organization.
We had not actually recruited much for more than a decade. Like the rest of the federal government, as I said, we downsized about a third. And I think like most of the federal government, we downsized in the most comfortable way possible. We shut the front door. And so we rarely recruited more than 200 people a year in a civilian workforce that numbers in the thousands. And we were puzzled. We weren't sure how well we could recruit. And this year we decided that the target had to be 600. That, like the rest of the government, our workforce is aging. And if we waited for that buildup of 15 to 20 years to retire before we started to recruit new faces, all the coaching and mentoring that should go on from the experienced veterans to the newly arrived wouldn't happen. And so we've been aggressively trying to recruit. We set the target at 600 for this year. We're going to hire 607. We set the bar high in terms of core mission as opposed to support skills, entry level as opposed to bringing in people at mid and upper grades. We've been successful in every metric we could have. Grade point average, SATs, majors, prestigious institutions, and so on. This is as good as we've ever been. And so we're really heartened by that. And I mean really heartened because government pay scales do not match private sector pay scales for most of these skills. In addition to all that, before we let anyone come to work with us, we ask them a very long series of personal questions for their background investigation. And then just to cap it all off, we wire them up and ask them those questions again while a polygrapher measures the results. And so there's an extra burden of sacrifice that the people of the National Security Agency take just to come work for us.
Coming up after the break, we'll ask General Michael Hayden of NSA to peer into his crystal ball and tell us about the future of NSA. Hear the vision. We come back with more of the Business of Government Hour.